This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about this afternoon as we have a full round of fixtures this week, last night and tonight. Looking at some of the results from last night, it is Blackburn 1, Nottingham Forest 1, Hull 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0, Leeds 1, West Brom 0, Middlesbrough 1, Preston 1, Wigan 1, Birmingham 0, Reading 1, Fulham 4, and Stoke 0, Huddersfield 1. Obviously, the big ones that jump out, Leeds ending West Brom's unbeaten run. We'll be getting the West Brom perspective from Joe Chapman, West Brom reporter for the Birmingham Mail and Birmingham Live. Also, Tony Pulis's comments on Sky last night about Serge Gnabry scored 4 in the Champions League against Tottenham last night. He said he could never get him fit during his loan spell at West Brom. How times change. In just 3 years, he's gone from not being in West Brom's side to scoring 4 in the Champions League group stages against Tottenham. Not bad for Serge Gnabry. We'll also be wondering how on earth Nathan Jones is actually still in a job at the moment. He is certainly hanging by the smallest, the thinnest of threads. Could we over the next few days see Nathan Jones gone? He was resigned to losing his job after the game. It was one of the most honest interviews you'll ever see after their defeat against Huddersfield last night. We'll also be talking about Fulham. They have a wretched recent record at the Medeski Stadium, but they won 4-1. They were the dominant side. Tom Cairney scored twice, as did Alexander Mitrovic. Reading down to 10 men for most of the game, but a comfortable win for Fulham. We'll also be talking about Barnsley. They take on Derby tonight in the relegation zone, second from bottom. How badly do the home side need a win tonight? That's all coming here on the Championship Fan Show. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard. So plenty to talk about this afternoon in the Championship. We are wondering if Nathan Jones is going to lose his job. That interview was one of the frankest, most honest assessments you're ever going to get in that interview after their defeat to Huddersfield last night. It does feel like a matter of time when, not if. You look at some of the comments Nathan Jones said, "I gambled everything and it hasn't paid off. I gamble with other people's lives as well. My staff's lives, my wife's life. That is the thing for me that is really hurting, because I worked so hard to get to a certain position and it just hasn't worked out." Pretty brutal and honest from Nathan Jones. 4 wins in 34 games in charge of Stoke. It seems like Nathan Jones is on the brink. Plenty of other things to be talking about in this hour. An important result for Fulham away at Reading. They have a wretched record. It's been over a decade since the Cottagers won at the Medeski Stadium away at Reading, but they won comfortably last night. Goals from Alexander Mitrovic and Tom Cairney sealed the win for Fulham. Reading not going through the greatest period at the moment, but arguably the biggest game, where you could argue Stoke v Huddersfield, was for different reasons, but one of the biggest game last night was at Elland Road, as Leeds took on table toppers before last night, West Brom. It ended Leeds 1, West Brom 0. To give us the West Brom perspective, I'm delighted to say that Joe Chapman, West Brom reporter for the Birmingham Mail and Birmingham Live, joins us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Joe. West Brom's unbeaten record is now over. They were the last unbeaten side left in the Championship, but after defeating Leeds, that is over. What are your takeaways from that game as West Brom are not just knocked off their perch, but they lose that unbeaten run?
I thought, actually, to be honest with you, leaving the ground last night at 11 o'clock or so, if you rewind 7 months when Leeds tore West Brom apart, it was Darren Moore's penultimate match in charge and pretty much ended their promotion push last season. If you kind of come back to the modern day now, I really think that you can see there's a hell of a lot of an improvement in terms of the football being played. The only thing really missing last night was a kind of a clinical striker at the top end of the pitch to kind of finish off some of the lovely football they were playing. So, I mean, to be honest, speaking to Bilic after the game, he was very encouraged by what he saw. He's very pleased with the system, particularly. He thought Leeds had a little bit too much of a kind of authority in the first half. But the power of this, like, you can't really draw any comparisons over the course of the 7 months in terms of the performances. They were absolute poles apart.
If we look back then at last night's game, one of the things that struck me from Slaven Bilic's comments was about the amount of possession that West Brom had. They had 52%, so they had more possession away from home at Elland Road than Leeds did, but they just didn't carve out enough good opportunities. He felt like they deserved a goal, but they just couldn't quite convert the chances. Would that be a pretty honest assessment of last night, that had perhaps West Brom shown a little bit more composure, just a tiny bit more composure, then West Brom would have taken at least a point away from this game?
I think so. They changed with obviously this being the second of three matches in 8 days, he changed the starting 11 at the front end of the pitch so slightly. So he dropped Charlie Austin and started Hal Robson-Kearney. And of course, that continues to be a concern of sorts for Albion and Bilic, is the fact that they haven't actually got a striker on the books this season that scored a goal in open play. And while all the midfielders and the wingers are chipping in here and there, and they remain one of the top scorers in the division as a side, that's something that at the back of your mind is kind of nagging. And you'd love Charlie Austin, Hal Robson-Kearney to get off the mark sooner rather than later, because as good as Matt Phillips, Grady Ngannou and Mateus Pereira have been, they're not going to be able to kind of provide 50, 60 goals between them. The bulk of that really has to come from the front line, and Cardiff City on Saturday will prove to be another very, very tricky game. A side that are resilient and dogged, and we've seen that in the last couple of games where they've got some decent results.
It's interesting, Joe, that you pick up on the centre forwards not contributing enough goals, because you look at some of the investment that West Brom did or made over the summer. They brought Charlie Austin on loan from Southampton. They brought Kenneth Sahore from Cardiff. So is that a surprise that West Brom's centre forwards haven't contributed more goals, considering the experience that both of those players have in the Championship? They are proven Championship goal scorers. Charlie Austin has an okay Premier League record, not an absolute guaranteed 15 goal a season Premier League striker, but has proven that he is a decent Premier League striker as well as a very good Championship striker.
Yeah, I think Austin, he's come on, he's made the move very, very late in the day in terms of the transfer window. So he arrived on deadline day. He's obviously had not much of a pre-season. He's kind of openly spoken about that, and his relationship with Ralph Hasenhüttl at Southampton wasn't the best. That's certainly kind of set him back. And week on week, he's having to kind of play catch-up, I think, in terms of his match fitness and his sharpness. He's had a couple of sights on goal in recent weeks against Huddersfield and against Queen's Park Rangers, and it just hasn't really fell for him. So you kind of hope that it's just a case of, you know, it's on the horizon. Zahor is an interesting one, because that was one that you have a question mark over, firstly, at the fact that Cardiff, being a direct rival in the Championship to Albion, were actually happy to do business with a potential promotion competitor. And £8 million is a lot of money to spend on a centre-forward that's actually really, I think, only managed 11 or 12 goals in a single season. I think that's his best for Cardiff. He's not that guy that's going to be able to really replace the goals of Jay Rodriguez, Dwight Gayle. I think it was always going to be very, very difficult to replicate that kind of success of last season. I think Bilic really admitted that himself at the start of the season, that the goals were going to have to come from all over the pitch. So the goals themselves are, that's the way it's kind of panning out at the moment. We've got defenders that have got a couple of goals already this season, and I think it is just a case of sharing the burden among the entire squad.
One thing that many people say about the Championship, I think Neil Warnock's quite famous for saying it, it's all about momentum, it's all about going on unbeaten runs. Even if you're not winning every game, not losing games is actually one of the key things about a Championship season. That despite the defeat at one of the toughest places, arguably the toughest place to go in the Championship away at Elland Road, does it still kind of give West Brom fans a lot of confidence going forward this season that across the first 9 games of the season, West Brom not only were top, but it was the fact that they hadn't lost a single game so far?
Yes, I think so. Especially when you consider the fixtures they've actually had to play in that run. They've been to Leeds, they've been to Fulham, Queen's Park Rangers have won 4 on the bounce before they took them apart on Saturday. They've been to Derby and Nottingham Forest, won there on the opening game of the season, and obviously Forest haven't lost since then. So that kind of looks like a terrific result week on week. Generally speaking, I think Albion will be really, especially the fans that were there last night, will be really, really encouraged by what they saw in the second half. It was just a case of finding that goal. And of course, he didn't come, but Cardiff, it's a quick turnaround. And I suppose they can kind of look quickly to Cardiff. And if I think we'll find out quite a lot about West Brom on Saturday as regards to the response from the defeat. It's the first time they've suffered a defeat in the league this season. So it's all about what they can do. You don't want this to become something that kind of... well, festers is maybe a strong word, but you know, something that, especially with the international break on the horizon, a victory on Saturday would set them up very, very well for another unbeaten run, I'd hope, on the other side of the international break.
One man that has been singled out for a lot of praise at the start of the season, I saw Slaven Bilic's comments after the weekend's victory against QPR, is that of young teenage defender Nathan Ferguson, who Bilic compared to England international Declan Rice. He said that Nathan's mentality reminds him of Rice. He's only 18 on paper, but his mind is 25 or 27. He's not a kid. He's only a kid in a positive way, in that he's not afraid to take the ball forward and have a shot. Considering he's just 18, how exciting a prospect is he? And will West Brom, if they don't get promoted this season, will they start worrying about kind of big Premier League clubs coming in for an exciting talent like Nathan Ferguson?
I think Ferguson is a hell of a talent. He's someone that in the summer, when Slaven Bilic sat down with Albion and kind of discussed what they were going to do as regards to recruitment, they probably thought they were going to have to sign a couple of right backs because of the departures of Mason Holgate and Alan Neon and Tosin Adarabayo. Their various loan spells ended and they left. It basically meant that they brought Darnell Furlong in from Queen's Park Rangers, who has also been a hit, but Ferguson. It said that Bilic took two training sessions to kind of realise that Ferguson was going to be able to make the grade this season. His contract's up at the end of the season, so they're having to discuss a new deal, and that is still kind of ongoing. Those talks, that's something that really need to sort out sooner rather than later. He's proven himself to be very, very versatile. He's actually came through the ranks of the academy as a centre back, started the season at right back, and then, because of injuries to Kieran Gibbs and Connor Townsend, has actually played the last three or four matches at left back, and he doesn't actually look fazed wherever he's playing. He's coming up against some really, really good wingers in this division. I thought he was very good against Ivan Cavallero when they went to Craven Cottage, and he was very good last night as well against Helder Costa. So he doesn't seem fazed, and I think that the comment by Bilic to suggest that he's almost like a 25, 26-year-old, he's a very, very fair one to make.
And just finally, Joe, I just wanted to get your views on Serge Gnabry. Obviously, starred for Bayern Munich in the Champions League last night, scored four goals against Tottenham. And interestingly, Tony Pulis was on Sky Sports last night, and he was talking about Gnabry on the fact that he could never get him fit. Could you have imagined watching West Brom 3 years ago when he was on loan at West Brom in 2015-16, that he could have gone on to see that? Was there any glimpse of a player that could potentially go on to that? Or at that point in time, was there no indication that this lad, this young German player, could go on to become such a talent on the international stage?
It's a tough comment to make, really, because the bottom line is we saw so little of him in a West Brom shirt. He played a couple of games in the League Cup. I remember watching him against Port Vale in an early round of the League Cup game, and he didn't blow you away. I mean, obviously this is 3 or 4 years ago, so he was particularly young then. And of course he got a handful of starts under Arsene Wenger at Arsenal for his name. So we kind of hoped that he would have some kind of impact, and he played, I think, maybe something like 5 or 10 minutes, maybe, at most in the Premier League from the bench, and that was pretty much it. I mean, Tony Pulis' record with loanees wasn't great anyway. He signed a couple of players that were kind of from, shall we say, the bigger clubs in the Premier League. The likes of Alex Pritchard came from Tottenham and really didn't get much of a look in at all. And also they signed Brendan Galloway from Everton, and again was kind of bombed out. I mean, it was quite a common theme during Pulis' time at West Brom, that he signed these players on loan, these young kids, and if they didn't kind of make the grade immediately, then they just didn't get a look in and would be sent back to their loan clubs kind of with their tails between their legs. But of course nobody could see that Gnabry was going to be able to reduce what he'd done for Bayern Munich and Germany, and certainly particularly West Brom, but I mean even Arsenal, because they'd have held on to by the wise, I thought.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Joe. That was Joe Chapman, a West Brom reporter for the Birmingham Mail and Birmingham Live, looking back at West Brom's defeat to Leeds last night at Elland Road, which ended their unbeaten run. Also talking a little bit about Serge Gnabry. He was phenomenal last night. For however poor Tottenham were defensively, Gnabry caused all sorts of problems. His pace, but also the precision and accuracy of his strikes were phenomenal, and it is ridiculous. It just shows that in a few years, players can develop. I remember seeing him in a Champions League qualifier when Liverpool were taking on Hoffenheim, and he was okay then. And this was a couple of years ago now, and he was okay, but I wouldn't say he was anything better than an okay Champions League player. Last night feels like a massive moment for him. Four goals in a Champions League group stage game against Tottenham. He's a rather impressive display from him, and he is seen as the real future. People are wondering whether Bayern could replace Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery. Well, in the form of the likes of Serge Gnabry and Kingsley Coman, they got two very, very exciting young wingers in that side. If you want to get in contact with us about your championship club start of the season or your views on your club's fixtures this midweek, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. At Love Sport Radio, we are also on WhatsApp. We're going to continue to talk all things Championship next.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. Plenty of Championship fixtures to be discussing over these couple of days. Plenty of sides in action last night, plenty of games tonight. Obviously, there were a massive couple of games for very, very different reasons. One at the top at Elland Road, Leeds versus West Brom. The other right down the bottom, Stoke against Huddersfield. And it feels like Nathan Jones is just hanging on the breakfast show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's this morning. They were joined by Sam Parkin to review the EFL action. And they started by asking Sam about Nathan and whether Nathan Jones really is on the verge of losing his job.
You've got to feel sorry for him, haven't you? I mean, it's been difficult to try and critique them the last few weeks because he's tried absolutely everything. I think when you look at the fixture list, considering the start of the season and the back end of last season, when you see these two home games in close proximity, you knew that the writing was on the wall. He had to get a return of points from these games. They've lost both of them against, obviously, struggling Huddersfield last night. And it's very honest. You know, the writing's on the wall. What can he say after the game? He has given it everything. You don't become a bad manager overnight. It's just been... he's been incredibly unlucky, I think. He's had a lot of bad luck. I think there was a period about a month ago when he seemed to have found a formula. I saw them at Charlton and they lost, but they played very well. And I thought that was the time to stick to his guns and pick the same team for a few weeks. And he didn't do that. And I just think maybe he might reflect on that period a bit of costing him his job ultimately.
Well, do you know what you mentioned there about being unlucky? Because you can't help but feel, and we see this elsewhere, and I used a good example yesterday of Oxford, who were struggling until a few weeks ago. All of a sudden, they get a good victory, and that now leads to five clean sheets on the bounce, four wins, beating, was it Lincoln 6, West Ham 4, Gillingham 3. You know, they've got this belief within the squad. And, I mean, one of the big things with Stoke for me is the amount of individual errors. I know that Jack Butland's come under a lot of criticism, and you wonder, even a decision like that, the fact that Jack Butland wasn't sold to Aston Villa in the summer, for instance, something like that where suddenly just one decision may well have had a bit of a knock-on impact?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Oxford's a good comparison because I think, you know, people that are into the XG and stuff, it was really stacking up in Stoke's favour the first few weeks of the season. They were creating a number of chances, not taking them at one end and then individual errors costing them at the other end. And yeah, there's other ingredients involved. Let's not kid ourselves. There's going to be a few in that squad that haven't bought into what he's been preaching, whether that's an ego thing, whether it's because they've been Premier League players and they don't believe they should be at that level. I think there's been a bit of that going on. But I think the biggest thing, and I think he alluded to it after the game against Stoke, was you have to get the platform right. Yes, you can go and be intricate and the players at the top end of the pitch can express themselves once you've got that platform. They haven't had that platform. And I think that's basically saying that he's got a lot of players that want to go forward and get on the ball, but he hasn't got players that want to run back. And I think that's what he had at Luton. And I think that is exactly what he's identified the last few games. Not everyone has been on board and given 100%.
So what's the answer for Stoke? Because they've tried to play a different style of football, but the reality is now, you know, bottom of the table. Is it time that they just went back in the market for Tony Pulis?
Well, he was on Sky last night and he was playing with a very straight bat. So who knows? I don't think a large amount of the Stoke supporters would welcome that, to be completely frank. But it might have to be someone who can come in and firefight. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't really think of anyone this moment, but I'm sure there's plenty of experienced managers at Championship level out of work. And it might be just a steady in the ship job for the rest of this season. And then the owners getting their heads together again in the summer and thinking which way they want to go. I mean, I'm so disappointed if this is the end, because I was surprised that they could get him. I was surprised that he went. Mm. And I believed he was going to be a complete success there. So I'm still trying to get my head around it, because it's difficult to fathom that it's all gone so horribly wrong.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. It was interesting watching Tony Pulis, actually. You're right, he did straight bat. But at the same time, he basically said, didn't he wouldn't ever speak about someone's job while they're still in the job. Yeah. However, it's well known that he's looking for a return into football. If there is someone to firefight, there is an argument to say that even if it were just the end of the season, you'd expect him to certainly get safety, if nothing else. I want to go to the other end of the table. Leeds find themselves back on top of the pile. A good win against West Brom. West Brom's first defeat of the season.
Yeah, but brilliant victory. Hard-fought victory against a team in West Brom who are improving game by game. I mean, I thought they were exceptional in the second half. Dominated the ball. The only criticism is they didn't work Kessié enough, and Leeds were still creating chances on Johnson's goal at the other end. So it was probably a draw would have been the fair result. But I've seen a few performances like this throughout the Championship season so far. Sometimes it's about rolling your sleeves up and blocking shots and being dogged. And Leeds had that in abundance. You could sense it with the crowd as well. I thought there was an outstanding individual performance from Patrick Bamford, who gets an enormous amount of criticism, quite rightly sometimes, because he misses chances. But he gave a fantastic centre-forwards performance last night, and much needed from Leeds. But let's not kid ourselves. West Brom are going to be, I don't know, I'd probably make them, considering what they've done the last couple of weeks, I'd probably fancy them to finish above Leeds this season.
Interesting. Well, it's interesting now, like the league's starting to take shape, something I always love about the Championship. Only 4 points separating first and tenth. Of course, a couple of teams in action tonight, which we'll touch on. But certainly last night in particular, Fulham, a quick mention for them, a big win away at Reading. You'd expect them to be there or thereabouts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the worst possible team to go down to 10 men against. I've seen the tackles this morning, John Swift, who's not that type of player at all. So I would imagine the management would have been seething, because that's cost Reading any opportunity of getting anything from the game. When I've seen Fulham live, it's too safe, the passing. They keep the ball brilliantly. But yeah, if they could get a little bit more dynamic running behind Mitrovic from the two wide boys, Cavaliero and Knockhart, who I think want to come to feet too often. All three of those players want to come to feet. If they could be a little bit more direct, they should absolutely romp this league. We'll certainly be in that, you know, mix for automatic promotion. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to go down to 10 men against them. And with Mitrovic and obviously Kearney, the form he's in, that was a foregone conclusion, really, that they were going to run out handsome victors last night.
And a quick word on the fixtures tonight. Barnsley taking on Derby, Cardiff, QPR, Charlton, brilliant, of course, so far this season, taking on Swansea, Luton, Millwall, interesting encounter there. But I just want to touch on Brentford, Bristol very quickly. How do you see that one playing out?
Well, I was there Sunday at Barnsley, and that was a second half performance where it all came together for Brentford. They were brilliant. They were helped by some quite comical defending from Barnsley at times, but I suppose that conversation still wrangles on. Is Ollie Watkins going to be that centre forward and get that return of goals? Well, that was the perfect day for him on Sunday to not get the typical Ollie Watkins goals, which are maybe running onto things, beating a man, getting strikes away, but three headers in and around the 6-yard box. And I think Ollie can do it. It's whether he wants to do it. And I think that can be vitally important, what he produced on Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, looking back to their best with Canos on one side and Benrahma on the other, looking good for Brentford. Obviously, I still think they could probably do with another season Championship marksman in there as well. They've got Karolis, the lad from the Greek player as well, who has started to come on off the bench. So if he can be an asset as well, no reason why Brentford can't, you know, push for playoffs this year. And yeah, tough game against Bristol City, very well, good away from home, 3-3 at Preston at the weekend. I'd expect something similar, maybe a score draw tonight.
That was Sam Parkin, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's this morning to talk all things EFL. Remember, you can catch Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10am. Well worth a listen. Obviously, talking about two massive games. The bigger one, in my view, actually, was the one down the bottom of the table. Danny Cowley looking for his first win as the Huddersfield manager, managed to secure that at the Bet365. And Nathan Jones's nightmare continues, and it feels like it is most certainly coming towards an end after that defeat to Huddersfield yesterday. He had a pretty frank assessment of his tenure and what's to come in his job in the next few days, probably. He was pretty honest in his interview after the game, and I believe we have a bit of audio of what he said after the game yesterday.
I know you said before the game that this will, no matter what happens, be a steep learning curve for you. I just wondered, do you feel you could have done the thing more up to this point?
Possibly. I would have made different decisions along the way. I would have put different people on a penalty when they think, or I would have, you know, just, I would have. It's a learning curve. And look, I the thing I'm sad about is, because this is a wonderful club, I left a wonderful club, a wonderful group of people that were really on the way up. And I gambled everything, and it hasn't paid off. And I gambled with other people's lives as well, my staff's lives, my wife's life and things. And that's the thing for me that's really hurting, because I you know, I'd worked so hard to get to a certain position, and then look, it just hasn't worked out. But that's football, and I came to a wonderful club, wonderful owners. I can't thank them enough. The fans have given me patience, but I haven't repaid them.
Pretty brutal, honest assessment there from Nathan Jones. You don't necessarily hear a lot of pure honesty from managers, but that was honesty at its best, really. And no manager ever wants to be sacked, but you kind of get the sense from what he was saying there that he would kind of be relieved to be taken out of this ongoing nightmare. As I mentioned, four wins in 34 games as the Stoke manager. Things were going so well at Luton. It was brilliant, the job that he was doing there. Made the move to Stoke, and it's just gone from bad to worse to even worse. And things are pretty terrible for Nathan Jones at the moment. And you can see the toll that it's taking on him psychologically as well, that you very, very seldom hear those types of interviews with managers. That usually, yes, lots of managers take the brunt of the criticism, but that was, he was talking about how he's kind of damaged, ruined his wife's life, his family's wife, his staff's life, and I sort of think with that, however bad a job he may have done, hasn't done it intentionally, he didn't do it deliberately. It's just that things have not panned out well at all, and sometimes in management that does happen. I'm a little bit surprised that Nathan Jones on this Wednesday afternoon at 2:30 still has a job at Stoke. It does feel like maybe they're waiting until that international break, where they have a couple of weeks to maybe make that change and look at other options as to who could come in. The rumour is they could return for Tony Pulis. I don't think the style of play is going to improve, but they'll be hoping that results do and get themselves out of this massive hole that they are currently in. But Nathan Jones still, as it stands, the Stoke manager, but I can't imagine that will be for much longer. One side that had an emphatic victory in the Championship last night was Fulham. They won comfortably by 4-1 at Reading. Goals 2 from Tom Kearney and also 2 from Alexander Mitrovic. They have an awful record at the Medeski. Reading, though, down to 10 men from the 20th minute, and Fulham dominant throughout. So we'll be reacting to that game next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be turning our attention to one of the fixtures from last night in the Championship. An easy win for Fulham away at Reading, which is a place that they do not have a particularly good recent record, but 4-1 was the scoreline. Mitrovic and Kearney both striking twice as Fulham cruised to victory against 10-man Reading to go fourth in the Championship. And to look back at that game, a man that must be pretty happy with that result is Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jack. Even though Reading were down to 10 men for a lot of the game, was it as dominant a display as the 4-1 scoreline suggests?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's a very much a scoreline that reflects the nature of the game. To be honest, the fact that we didn't keep a clean sheet is probably a little bit annoying. Imagine for Marcus Bertinelli, it's a fantastic strike from Mata to actually get the goal for Reading. But I think a lot of Fulham players would have been a little bit annoyed that it wasn't 4-0. We were dominant even with 11 for the first 20, to be honest. And then the sending off made it even more so. So one of those games, yes, it's been, as you say, quite tough at the Majewski. I think that was my seventh visit, first ever victory. So that was quite nice and exercised a few of the demons, I think, from that playoff semi-final loss there a couple of years back.
As you mentioned, and I mentioned it as well, Fulham do have an awful record there. Reading had not lost in six league and playoff games at home to Fulham, a run stretching back to when both clubs were in the Premier League in 2008. Why is it that the Midasi Stadium has been that type of stadium? Obviously, all clubs have one of those grounds they just always seem to struggle with. Is it a mentality thing, or is there something deeper than that that has meant that this has been Fulham's first win at that stadium in a long while?
I mean, I think, you know, you said it there, since 2008. So six games in, you know, 11 years. It's not been that regular, I suppose, a fixture for us. I think it's just one of those ones where they've always sort of upped their game a little bit against us. And, you know, I don't know whether that has to do with the kind of, I wouldn't say rivalry. Fulham obviously have a lot of local rivals who we play regularly often. And whereas Reading don't, and I know that, and, you know, talking to people from Brentford, they have a similar kind of thing where they go there and it feels a bit more like a derby game, I suppose, for Reading fans than it would do for Fulham fans. So potentially that plays into it, makes it more of a kind of fixture that they feel like they need to get up for and get the fans up for. So it's potentially that. But ultimately, I think, you know, Reading have been a reasonably good side when we've played them over these kind of the years that we've played them. And apart with the one exception of us drawing 1-1 with 10 men there in, I think it was 2017, with Lucas Piazza scoring the equaliser late on, it's been very much a non-happy hunting ground. And I think very much Tom Kearney last night celebrating in the exact spot where he was apologising to the fans after that playoff semi-final loss. And I was discussing this on the podcast earlier for Fulham, but it's one of those moments where it might not mean that much to us in the course of this season. But, you know, if Tom Kearney writes an autobiography in 20 years' time, that might be a moment for him. Like, I went back there and kind of got rid of the heartache that had happened on that pitch.
One man that was in pretty fine form alongside Tom Kearney last night was Alexander Mitrić. He scored twice, his sixth and seventh goals of the campaign. Were you surprised in the summer that Fulham were able to keep hold of Mitrovic? And obviously, it's a pretty obvious answer that we know you're going to say, Jack, but he is surely going to be an absolute key, an absolute must to be in good form this season if Fulham are to get back in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Fulham managed it really, really well in terms of they've obviously sorted out a new contract with him that he was happy with. He seems to have settled. And I think that something with Mitrovic, you know, over the years, he never really settled and was never really that loved at Newcastle. He was very much someone that divided opinion. And I think probably coming back to Fulham and finding somewhere that the fans absolutely loved him from day one and were really sort of supportive, no matter if he scored or didn't score. I mean, there's rare games he doesn't score these days. But, you know, when it did go tough for him in the Premier League, they were still very, very, you know, supportive of him. And he was very much a talisman for us. So I think that probably plays into it. And I imagine that had something to do with it. He's obviously settled his children here in London. And look, he'll want to play at the highest level. I don't think anyone's under any illusions that he wouldn't want to do that going forward. But if Fulham can, you know, maintain a charge at getting back to the Premier League and they can show him that they have ambitions to do that and stay there this time, I don't see why he would want to move. He's very much the focal point talisman. And you can see him maybe going forward becoming a bit of sort of a Troy Deeney character for Fulham or someone of that kind of ilk in that, you know, he likes it here, he's loved here. He can do barely any wrong at Fulham, and that's probably beneficial to his game. It's, you know, you've seen him calm down from that volatile character we saw a lot at Newcastle, and I think that's important, and just for him to feel that he's supported.
Two of the men that Scott Parker singled out, as we mentioned, Mitrovic and Tom Kearney. In particular, Kearney's second goal was a pretty fine strike from about 35 yards out to give Fulham that 4-0 lead. Where is Tom Kearney at with his career? Because he was a key part, obviously, of Fulham's promotion into the Premier League. And then last season, he didn't play all the time, didn't necessarily play in his best position and was a bit indifferent. We didn't really see the best of Tom Kearney. Now he's back in the Championship, seems to be playing well. Is it a fair assessment to say that at this moment in time, Kearney's level is probably in between the Championship and the Premier League? Maybe not quite good enough to excel at the Premier League, but perhaps too good for the Championship?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an unfair comment. I think I'd add to it that potentially the fact that Fulham were under the cosh and completely adapted their style away from that possession-heavy game that Tom Kenny sort of really favours didn't do him any favours last year and, you know, rendered him kind of unable to shine in the Premier League. I think he is probably good enough to play at a lower sort of Premier League club. I think he has the talent and the ability to do that. He, you know, the way he controls games, the way he picks passes is almost second to none in the Championship, and I think that he would be able to step that up. I just think that he's not maybe cut out for a scrap in the Premier League, and I suppose that's the difficulty. If Tom Kearney was playing for a Leicester of last year, let's not talk about Leicester of this year, obviously a cut above at the moment, but you know, I think he would be perfectly capable in that role, able to sort of make that happen, or West Ham or someone like that. I think he'd be able to do so, but you know, he wasn't cut out for the Premier League survival scrap. And the way that Fulham adapted their system under Ranieri basically isolated him, left him sort of playing in a host of different positions that he didn't like. And I just hope that if we do go back up and Kearney is at the helm of that, we allow him and Mitrovic to kind of shine in a system that suits them, even if it doesn't bring immediate results. And we've seen that playing possession football under Parker was better than what it was under Ranieri, where we tried to sort of scrap out points with a team that didn't suit that. And I think that if we were to go up, we need to build a team around those strengths rather than sort of try and change things up to make it work.
Is the one thing that is frustrating from last night, Jack, the fact that the Fulham didn't keep a clean sheet because they were dominant in the game, 4-0 up, and in the 89th minute, however good a strike it was from Yaku Meite, that clean sheet was gone, even though Fulham will be very, very happy getting rid of that Medeski Stadium hoodoo and getting another win to continue this unbeaten run. Is that going to be nagging away at Scott Parker that they just couldn't quite get it, even though Fulham won comfortably? Just that one goal just taints that victory just a little bit.
Maybe. I think the person that probably be most annoyed about is Marcus Bettinelli, because I imagine on a, you know, one level he'll be really upset to not get the clean sheet, and on a potentially more cynical level he probably gets a clean sheet bonus. But on the whole, you know, there are, yes, he should have been closed down a little bit quicker, but sometimes you've got to stand up and be like, what a strike, there's not too much you can do about that. And the more you watch that Mesut goal, it just gets better and better every time you see it. So, yes, he'll probably be quite annoyed about it. Maybe Scott will be like, you need to close down people quicker. But I think that on the whole, people will be pretty pleased with last night. And Marcus Bettinelli, especially with his performance in the first half, made two quite good saves, will probably not be thinking about it too much. We talk about if Fulham had scored in a great goal in a 4-1 loss, I wouldn't be paying it too much heed. And thus, I suppose, conceding a goal in a 4-1 win, I probably shouldn't either.
It's 5 unbeaten now for Fulham, and one of the things that people always talk about the Championship, I've already mentioned it in this hour so far, is about momentum and going unbeaten, even if it doesn't mean you winning every game, just making sure you don't lose. Is that the key for Scott Parker at the moment, is even if it's not win after win after win, making sure that you don't lose a game for a long while will find Fulham comfortably at the top? They're currently in fourth place, just a couple of points off the top. That's the key thing for Fulham, is that consistency of just making sure that they're winning and at the very least drawing, making sure they don't lose for a long period of time now.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's very much, you know, it plays into that, but just keeping touch with the leaders, with the teams around you. We don't want another, you know, while Fulham's 23 game unbeaten run in 2018 was absolutely phenomenal, it put us in a position where we were constantly chasing, and we don't want to be in that again if we're going to try and get an automatic place. We want to be in touch, and then if you lose a game in the middle of that, it suddenly doesn't become the end of the world, because you're like, okay, it's annoying that we've lost that, it's frustrating to have not, you know, pushed on, but ultimately if you're in touch with people, it's going to come down to the end of the season and who's got the bottle. And I think that ultimately this squad should have the character and ability to push things through. So I think people were a bit worried. We were intense, and then we spoke about this on Monday, but even before this game, in 10th position, we were 4 points off top. And that's not too bad at this point, especially because aside from the first half yesterday, perhaps, and the first half against Millwall, I don't really think Fulham have hit top gear very often this season so far. And so if we're in touch, having not really gelled and not really made things click, that's probably a good position to be in. And, you know, Fulham win on the weekend against Charlton, we'll go top even for a couple of hours briefly. And that kind of position, without necessarily having played that well so far, is a good place to be.
And just finally then, Jack, you talk about that game on Saturday's 12:30 kickoff at Craven Cottage, a bit of a London derby, Fulham at home against Charlton. Obviously, we go into an international break straight off the back of that. How important is it for Fulham, not just in terms of their league position and continuing this unbeaten run, but also that positive confidence, that mentality going into the international break? How crucial are not just a draw, but actually getting all 3 points on Saturday at home against Charlton?
Yeah, I think it's a massive game, and I think it's probably our biggest test so far, aside from West Brom. Charlton have started the season really well, even if they're slightly outperforming their kind of statistical output. That's, you know, it's impressive, and there's shades of that kind of Reading side that went to the final and lost to Huddersfield in how they're performing at the moment. They've got some brilliant players. You know, I know Gallagher's been absolutely phenomenal in the middle, and Lyle Taylor's very good at putting the ball in the back of the net. So there's things to be worried about. I think it's a crucial game for both sides. I imagine they'll be very much up for it. It's a big test. But if we come through it, I think we're in a really good position coming out into that international break, like you say. And yeah, in that case, I think it's crucial for momentum, it's crucial for position, and it's also just crucial for mentality that we win these kind of games.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jack. That was Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast, and I'm sure that all Fulham fans are pretty happy that Lyle Taylor's not fit at the moment. Obviously injured, out for Charlton, one of the informed strikers at the start of the season, but is going to be out for a little while, so that might help Fulham's cause on the weekend. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. We're going to continue looking at some of the other championship sides. And up next, we're going to be talking all things Barnsley.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking about all things Barnsley now. And I'm delighted to say that Carlo from the Reds Report joins us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Carlo. Let's look back at last weekend before we look ahead to tonight's big game at home against Derby. It was a 3-1 loss at home against Brentford on Sunday. Within a minute, Corley Woodrow had given Barnsley the lead with a fantastic strike from just outside the penalty area, but all went wrong from there. A 3-1 defeat, Ollie Watkins scoring a hat-trick for Brentford. What really went wrong on Sunday for Barnsley, Carlo?
It's a really weird one, because obviously, you know, I said last week or a couple of weeks ago when I was on the show that performances were actually improving. We weren't necessarily getting the results, but we were definitely creating chances. So you're at home, you know, you're on Sky. You score an half-decent goal in the first minute or so. And I tell you what happened. I think Brentford have the pedigree and the experience to just keep playing as they do. And then slowly they got into the match. 1-1, and then straight after, straight after half-time, they made it 2-1. The moment that second goal went in, from a fan's point of view, sitting in the stand or in the press box, it felt like there was nobody taking that game by the reins. You know, a little bit of lack of leadership, experience, and they were just looking at each other almost. And it turned out to be definitely one of the poorer performances at home this season, probably besides the Luton match, which was even worse. And it's worrying that after a series of decent performances, although the results weren't there, we just, you know, it just all broke down all over. Loose passing. There seemed to be no communication on the pitch, and credit to Brentford. Brentford, afterwards, their manager in press conference said, you know, it was never the idea or it was never the tactic to exploit sort of like the right-hand side of Barnsley's defence. But that's what happened, and that's where all the goals came from. A few of the goals, don't get me wrong, they're too easy. They shouldn't be scored like that. And I take nothing away from the lad getting a hat-trick, but you expect a better level of defending in the Championship than what Barnsley displayed on Sunday. So, and I'm getting a little bit sick of I go to the press conference after, of opposition managers praising Barnsley. It's easy to praise them, isn't it? I mean, you go on with 3 points. And they're saying, yeah, it's a really good style of football. They're all very, very young boys, but they'll get there. And if Barnsley keep doing what they're doing, they'll be okay. But, you know, we're in October now. It needs to kick in, doesn't it? And I think, you know, that high pressing and everything, that's still there. But if we concede, as shown on Sunday, leadership and experience goals is lacking. And that's worrying, because how do you possibly address that? That's really, really hard. You can't bring anybody in. I know a petition of a large part of Barnsley fans saying, we're crying out for experience. and that then goes sort of like against the DNA of the club, which is you bring in lower league, young players, you develop them, and then eventually you sort of like, you sell them on, and you make a profit and you start again. And I'm all for that, and it's proven that that can work. If you look at, you know, a Pinnock, a Mawson, a Cunningham, you know, that it's worth it. But they were always on the pitch with people that had some experience, and we've got people playing that have, you know, have played lots of matches, but not necessarily in this division. And it's a tough division. As a striker, you might get three or four chances. Woodrow puts the first one away. Absolutely fantastic. But then if we can't create another one, or we miss it or whatever, it all seems to break down a little bit. And I'll be honest with you, Kieran, that's worrying, because it's a long, hard season, isn't it?
How much pressure, Carlo, do you think that Daniel Stendel is under at the moment? I remember when the Huddersfield job became available, he was one of the leading contenders for that job. So as they head into tonight's game against Derby, obviously in the relegation zone, second from bottom, is the pressure ramping up for Stendel in terms of his job security?
You know what? I don't think it is. What I do think, and I've got no evidence of this, but what I feel is Stendel's, disappointment, frustration, because he's talked about experience just or during the summer transfers and everything with people coming in, you know, very happy with the people that was brought in and everything else. But he did mention the word experience quite a bit. And I can't help but wonder, with this series of results and us lacking that bit of experience and almost leadership on the pitch, I could probably see him leave for another job rather than being sacked by the Barnsley board, because they will back him. But I think also the fact that he didn't sign an extension to his current contract is maybe an indication that he wants to see, you know, how the board back him. They've backed him in the summer with the players that have come in, 11 in total. But I'm pretty sure, as things stand now, that he will be, I can't say the word demanding, but he will be looking to add in the January transfer window, and maybe not somebody at 19, 20 or 21, but maybe at somebody at 25, 26 or 27 that's got a bit of experience in this division, because that, for most Red fans at Oakwell, to see that's what's been lacking.
And just quickly, a prediction for tonight then, Carlo. Barnes at home against Derby. Can Barnsley get 3 points?
Well, it's my birthday today, so rather than a card, I've asked the club if we could have 3 points, because I'd be happy with that. You know what? It really, really depends on what side turns up. The capability is there, and I will maintain to say that I think we've got the pedigree and we've got the ability to compete in this division. We're never going to finish in the top 10, but we should easily be able to sustain this division. But that can only happen if the players play as a unit and maybe get some help from some experienced players that can come in and organise things off the pitch. Because once they get on the pitch, tactically there's nothing wrong. It's on the pitch. So I'll go with a draw. I'll be happy with a draw as long as you don't lose, because we can't keep leaking points at Oakland. Definitely not.
Well, happy birthday, Carlo, and we wish you all the luck tonight. Hopefully you can have a good present. Thank you very much for joining us on your birthday, Carlo. That is Carlo from the Reds Report, giving his thoughts ahead of Barnsley's game at home against Derby. There you go. Happy birthday to you, Carlo. We wish you all the best. Hopefully you can get 3 points at Oakwell tonight against Derby. All Barnsley fans will be hoping it, especially Carlo, on his birthday, and all of us at Love Sport wishing the best. Wish him a happy birthday and wish him all the luck tonight against Derby.
This is Love Sport.